Hello, everyone, and welcome to Spira's Talk Radio Podcast Hours. This is our first episode, so it's a wonderful, wonderful time to catch up with our community. We're going to be posting these podcasts hopefully once a week with all kinds of topics, from yoga to, you know, daily events and so forth. Our first episode is with Karina. Hi, Karina.
Hi, Dora.
Hi.
Hi, everyone.
I'm good. Thank you. And those of you who don't know Karina, she's a yoga teacher with Spira Power Yoga, and we co-teach the 200-hour and 500-hour teacher trainings. Do you want to a little bit introduce yourself, Karina, of like where you're from and how long you've been doing yoga, and just a short little something?
Okay. And well, I am originally from Brazil, but I've been here, you know, I think 26 years, maybe longer at this point, I've lost count. And yeah, I was introduced to yoga back in Brazil when I was a kid. And I went to a yoga class when I was maybe 13 for the first time. And I went with my aunts, you know, a couple of aunts and my dad. Like, it was a family thing. We went to, there was this woman that had trained in India, and she was really good, but it was not the yoga that you see today, you know, in studios. I mean, there were no yoga studios to begin with in those days. So it was a very interesting class. And it was all, you know, we did everything with your eyes closed. It was more meditative. Yes, we did poses and a lot of breathing. And then, but we also did chanting and meditation at the end. And it was awesome. And I really enjoyed it. But then I didn't practice for a while. Then I found it again when I was in college. Oh. And so I've been, yeah. So that was like, you know, way back when. But like I said, consistently, I've been practicing, yeah, for maybe almost 30 years now. But, you know, it wasn't until college that I really got more, this is something that I want to do. And then when I moved to the US, then I started practicing regularly.
So if there is one thing, because it's hard, because I think there's more than one thing, but if there is possibly one thing that you can think of that you love about yoga, what would be that one thing?
The one thing is that it introduces me to myself. I'm not, you know, it's just, it started, you know, with the body, is introducing, you know, you have to start where you, with what's familiar to, and for most of us is our body, right? But then as you start to go into your body and learn about your body and through the breath, because yoga without breath is really not yoga, right? Then you realize that there's so much more to yourself that you didn't even know, because we think we are our thoughts, we think we're the body, we think we are even our moods, you know, and our likes and dislikes, and we're not. But yeah. Before yoga, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I have to say that's what I love about it as well. And it never ends, because at every cycle in your life, you open up a new cycle and new discoveries, and really staying on this path of svadhyaya, self-study, is what keeps me with yoga as well. And yes, I like the side effects of, you know, being really strong and fit and all that, but it becomes less and less important as I go along with my yoga practice, though that is an important part of the practice. You know, the practice of the asana is important.
I agree. I could not just do the meditation. In order to be able to even sit in meditation, I need my physical practice. And not only that, just so that I'm sane, we sit a lot in front of the computer all day. A lot of us have desk jobs. If you don't take care of the body, it starts with the body, and you have to take care of the body, right? So then it's the complete system. We need all of it, I think.
Yeah. And you talked about the breath, and a couple of months ago, I wrote a little blog about this book, The Breath, by Jane Nestor, and it's a lovely, lovely book. So far, if you guys are listening, you haven't read it yet, it's also available on audiobook, and it's a good format for audiobook. I find it's a light enough listening that it's enjoyable. But it was lovely to read about what the breath has in store for us as far as health and vitality in a popular culture format, you know, because we talk about it during yoga classes, but I sometimes feel it becomes kind of this, I don't know, I'm looking for words, but you know, this thing that's hard to formulate and it's too foreign and it's too unknown for students to understand. But this book did a good job on it. And it right away opened up with this shocking result through science that now they're proving that the way we chew and what we chew and how we breathe actually changes our teeth and our skull structure.
Yeah, it's incredible. That's why so many people, you know, need to, you know, need braces and retainers and things like that, because, and we have crooked teeth. We're the only species in the whole animal kingdom that has to wear braces, most of us, you know, and it's like, you know, dogs usually have perfect teeth and cats and all other animals. And even our ancestors had perfect teeth, right? But we don't, you know, and it's part of that because we have forgotten how to breathe properly.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, my little dog didn't have perfect teeth, but that's because of human intervention into dogs and making them small and shrinking them to a size that we think is, you know, it's a lot of our interventions into how things should look created a lot of problems for the animals as well, not just humans. But one of the main things that the book talks about and what we also emphasize during yoga classes is the problem with mouth breathing and this chronic mouth breathing culture that is developed the past, you know, millennia for humans. Can you talk a little bit about that and really why it's so bad for us?
Oh my gosh, you know, there's a reason why we have our nose, right? And breathing through the mouth, you know, you don't have all the filters. It also, it's drying. That's why like people who sleep at night and snore and sleep with their mouth open, you're always thirsty, right? And you wake up parched and all of that. But there's so much more. There are a lot of, you know, snoring, sleep apnea, so many dysfunctions and diseases and things that happen from sleeping with the mouth open and from breathing through the mouth that could easily be all eradicated if we knew how to breathe properly through the nose, right? Even, you know, even diabetes and so many other things that can happen because of all these other, you know, breathing disturbances from breathing through the mouth could be maybe even mitigated or even corrected to go away if we could breathe through the nostrils, right?
Yeah, and the, you know, I teach mindfulness classes and stress management classes as well. And really learning to breathe properly is that anchoring device for mental health as well. You know, of so much of our anxiety and fear is based in heavy mouth breathing as opposed to calm and steady nasal breathing. So it's interesting how you can regulate your mind and your body and also your physiology just with the simple tool, the breath.
Yeah. The book even talks about athletes that they had experiments with athletes that they, you know, they would run or do all whatever workout they were doing, whatever, you know, physical regimen they did, you know, breathing through the mouth and then the same thing, breathing through the nose. And like they were exhausted and depleted after breathing through the mouth, as you know, but when they were breathing through the nose, they were actually revitalized and they still had energy at the end and actually felt better. Yeah. So there's also that a lot of people are exhausted because they're breathing through the mouth is exhausting and it becomes the new normal and you don't realize that's why you're always tired. That's why you're depressed, right? Or you have insomnia or all these things. And including, as you said, you know, anxiety, depression. So the mental things to not just go. You know, so there's so much we could go on and on. There are more things we could say about this. And then how can you work out and take care of your body if you, at the end, you know, go buy, you know, ride your bike or swim and do everything you know, with your, just from breathing through the mouth, and you see that, you know.
And it is difficult because at first you don't get enough air, but I have to say after 20 years of yoga, now I'm also a runner. I like trail running. I don't like to run competitively, but I like to get in the groove and be outside with nature. And I run about, you know, anywhere between 4 to 8 miles almost every day now. And yoga not only kept my joints healthy so that I can, being 45 years old, still run this much daily, but also it keeps me in great cardiovascular shape. And I run with my mouth closed. I run completely just breathing through the nose in a slow, steady breathing. And I got to a point, I got inspired by the book, and I started doing some interval training. And I got to a point where I'm able to sprint, you know, 100 meters and then walk and then 100 meters again. And I sprint strictly with nasal breathing. And this is something that yoga taught me. So maybe, Karina, here you can talk a little bit about when we teach our pranayama workshops, which here's the place of shameless advertisement. Karina has one coming up in April 8th, I think.
Yeah.
And it's going to be available on Zoom. What are the things that you teach your students so that they are able to kind of step into the power of the breath and our incredible aerobic capacity?
Well, first, we start with things very simple. And as I said, I like to start with what's real to the students, right? And so it's really learning to observe the breath. So mindfulness is key, to really observe, to really be present to how you're breathing rather than judge the way you're breathing. Notice your breathing patterns and then strengthen the diaphragm, the thoracic diaphragm muscle, because that's going to help you to actually breathe better through your nose and not through your mouth as well. Because every time we tell people about, you know, take a deep breath, people just puff up the chest, but they're not really using the full strength of the diaphragm.
Yeah.
And so we're going to
work abdominal muscle on the exhale, right? There is a lot of control of the exhale that's really important.
Yeah.
It's not in the, this just collapses your low back and you crush your spinal column.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we will talk about, really, we're going to do breath training, you know, and because when we were babies, we knew how to do this. But, you know, over time with stress and all that, and also our poor diet, all of those things, right? Then we start breathing through the mouth. And we also, the loose stone in the diaphragm. So we're going to do core stuff, because core helps you to strengthen your diaphragm. And we'll also focus on mindful breathing and the qualities of healthy breathing. And so I'll systematically go through all of the qualities and we'll practice. So very simple, yet simple means it's very powerful. And, you know, that's the workshop's going to be about the essential qualities of breathing, of healthy breathing. And anybody can do it. Even if you have a hard time, there are things you can do to help you clear. A lot of it is, a lot of people also have sinus and mucus and stuff because
but that's
the
reason to do it, isn't it? Like if you have an easy time breathing nasally as well, and it's kind of like the reason you take the workshop is to learn how to get better at it, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm always amazed when I do these work, this breathing work with you, just how much, even if it's simple, and even if I already know it, I still engage with it in a very powerful way. And it's in a great abdominal exercise. Everybody thinks that to get the abs of steel, you need to do these crazy crunches, which let's not go down that rabbit hole, because we all know that that's not exactly the right way to strengthen abs. But breathing is really powerful for all your trunk stabilizers. And I just walk away feeling calm, even if I have a lot of problems in my life.
And it's true, because when you breathe diaphragmatically, the way we're intended to breathe, it will stimulate the vagus nerve, which is the, you know, biggest nerve in your parasympathetic nervous system, which is the rest and digest portion of your nervous system. Because when you're breathing through your mouth, it's more fight or flight. So, and it promotes shallow chest breathing. So mouth breathing promotes shallow chest breathing. And then you're like, you know, and then of course you also have to take more breaths because they're shallow. So you're really taking way too many breaths. And a yogi is a person who can really take less breaths, you know, so it's breathing with quality is not, it's really quality. It's not quantity. So the more, the faster and more breaths is not better. You actually want to slow down the breath and you want to take less breaths. You don't need as many.
Yeah.
You start your life with an inhale, you end your life with an exhale, right? And in between you have all this series of inhales and exhales, and you want to make sure that you take your time because we're born with a certain number of breaths when they're out, according to yoga, right? So when you're done, you're out taking all your breaths and you're just taking too many, you know, you're simply, no, literally you're getting older faster.
Yeah. And that's not just some woo-woo yoga. It's whenever you have, you know, chronic illnesses, you end up taking rapid, shallow breaths. So the more chronic illnesses and the more anxiety you have, you do shorten your lifetime. So it's amazing how, you know, modern physics and physiology is meeting up with this ancient science, and they might have had a different way of expressing, but they're all expressing the same point. That actually brings up a topic that I wanted to hash out with you around breath, because I know when we both have been now teaching and practicing yoga for quite a while, and I don't know about you, but I was taught to breathe this ujjayi breath that was explained in a certain way of like pull your belly up and in and tuck your chin and make this oceanic sound in your nose and breathe nasally. But as I progressed, I tossed out everything about ujjayi breath except the breathe nasally. And I think the way ujjayi is taught now in most yoga studios is a misunderstanding of what was intended. So do you want to chat a little bit about that, Karina?
This is a very important point, Dora, because ujjayi breathing is a wonderful breath when you know exactly what it's in, what its purpose is and why you would practice ujjayi in the first place. And I think it was taken out of context and introduced it to, you know, especially in power yoga, power vinyasa yoga, all the vinyasa flows. And because of the way it is introduced now, it's actually a very, again, fight or flight type of breath that keeps everything shallow in the chest. And not only that, it strains the throat and the vocal cords, which I've always had problems with my throat before because I was doing all this crazy ujjayi breathing, because that's how I learned to practice yoga. Yeah. And you
it's
too.
The restriction in the throat, right? And you can see students really, there is so much focus, but they're not using the diaphragm at all because they pull the belly up and in, right?
Yeah, there's overuse of the throat. So it's, too much control, too Darth Vader-like, because, you know, and also this puff up of the chest, and because you're sucking the belly in with belly lock, the Uddiyana Bandha. What people don't tell you is that Uddiyana Bandha is an engagement that is modulated by the breath. So no, you don't suck the belly in and you can't talk for the rest, because, you know, it sucked in the whole class. They actually, you have to be able to breathe in your belly. So the Bandha is something that's more energetic, that yes, it has a muscular component, especially at the end of the exhale, then you pull it in. But in order to talk, you have to kind of let the belly go in and out. You can't just try to breathe in your chest and keep the belly sucked in and hard as a rock, because that's not good either. It's all about balance, right? Uh-huh. So from a scale of 0 to 10, 0 being no engagement at all, and 10 being when you do that in pranayama where you really lift, you don't want to do that. You know, ujjayi breathing is more like a pranayama that you can do and really, then it's different. But
it's a seated retention. I mean, that true ujjayi where they carve in, there's a picture of Krishnamacharya doing it. It's really famous. It's a seated retention meditation.
Yeah, you can do, you know, the ujjayi breathing, and then you can hold the breath and you can apply Uddiyana Bandha, Mula Bandha, you know, Jalandhara Bandha, all of these things that are the Bandha locks, right? And do that when you do your pranayama after you do your asana, you know, your physical practice.
Right.
That was separate. And the whole point is because ujjayi breathing with the gentle application, right, in the throat, not the way that it's taught, really constricting the toe, stimulates the roof of your mouth, which is the base of your pineal gland and your called the third eye center, right? And that is to promote meditation and focus here. That's the only reason why you would do ujjayi breathing, is to kind of, you know, yes, for meditation.
Push. It's almost like that little pressure up of it, pushing the with back breath. Of the tongue up is like a slight meridian point or acupuncture point that stimulates that upward concentration.
Yeah, and of energy. Yeah,
exactly. But the lowest ribs, the floating ribs, if they're not moving, you're not using your diaphragm. And there's exactly. no way that you can actually take a deep breath and not move the whole abdominal cage along with that low ribs. And so there is really a need to reformulate how we teach ujjayi in these flow classes.
Because I agree. Totally. I don't even do ujjayi breathing in the, you know, class, in the context of the class. As we're practicing, I always promote diaphragmatic breathing throughout the class. And then maybe at the end, if we're going to have time to sit in the classes where we offer, you know, breathing and meditation, then I introduce ujjayi in that context.
Yeah.
You know,
I do the same thing. I toss out that vocabulary word because it's just too murky. So I just call for deep breathing. Make sure you can feel your ribs moving, deep diaphragmic breath, something textural and plain English that people can relate.
Exactly. Yeah. Diaphragmatic, you know, abdominal breathing. You want, like you said, you want to move the lower ribs. You want really to engage the diaphragm consciously, right? Because, you know, it is one of the main muscles of respiration, and yet it's been weakened because we're just breathing so shallow. And even
and we're in using terms of the shoulder muscles, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And these neck muscles that just create more stress and absolutely no exhale. And one of the things that the book was really good about is really pointing out the importance of the deep, powerful exhale, because increasing carbon dioxide levels is just as important as taking in oxygen, right?
Yes, yes. And interestingly enough too, Dora, when you study yoga therapy for people with asthma, for example, and that people, you know, naturally think, oh, you know, people with asthma needs more inhale. No, they need exhale. They need exhale. So you need to teach somebody with asthma problems how to exhale fully and properly before they can take the inhale. Well, and that's a misunderstanding, right?
Yeah. But if you ever were unfortunate enough to spend time in a hospital, you know that they make you like have that thing that you blow into, and they don't let you out until that little bubble goes, like, I don't know, at least halfway up. So what they're measuring is your power to exhale. They're not in the hospital. They're not measuring your power to inhale. It's the power to exhale.
Yeah. And to empty completely, to remove all of the toxins and to really be clear so that you can then take more nourishment in, because the inhales are nourishing, life-giving, and the exhales are about emptying and get rid of all the stuff that doesn't serve you, right?
Yeah, and it's also, and this is also so true metaphorically in our life, that the inhale is passive. The inhale will happen properly if there is a good exhale. If there is not a good exhale, then there is no space to inhale. And I mean that metaphorically as well, because we tend to be in this capitalistic culture that's all about accumulation. But really, in order to have the appropriate things brought into you, what is most important is letting go.
Yeah.
The letting go step is what creates the space for the bringing in the new the right way.
Exactly. It's, so we're not just breathing in and out, you know, air, you know, something, you know, physical, but it's also about how we take in the world and how we process all of the ideas, thoughts, everything, you know, that comes our way, and then how we then properly also let go of the other stuff. And interesting too, that I was just thinking as we were having this conversation about people thinking about increasing the capacity of the lungs, it was really about deep breath, puffing up like we were talking, but the stronger your diaphragm is and you're able to breathe, in the abdomen area, then the easier it is to really empty the lungs completely and also to fill the lungs to more capacity, right? So it's really about, again, working with the diaphragm. Yeah. And the more you strengthen your diaphragm, naturally, your exhales will get longer.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm super excited about your workshop coming up, and I'm super excited to talk to you again, maybe in a couple of weeks, about breath. Because I would like to learn also more about things like Kalapati breath. For the listeners, just a quick summary of that not all yogic practices are about calming breath. There is also a technique to increase attention and awareness. So it's the sympathetic nervous system, and there are cleansing breaths and so forth. So I would love to, in the next episode, sometime review some of these different breath practices as well. Yes. That have a different goal than to calm and be steady.
Yeah, but first we need to learn to breathe,
yeah,
as we said, in a healthy manner and calm down and soothe the nervous system. And from that's the base for you then to learn those other pranayamas,
exactly,
which are then purifying pranayamas, cleansing pranayamas, energizing pranayamas. They're all sorts of pranayamas, but to learn those, you first need the base. You first need the essential, yeah, knowing how to breathe properly through your nose, using your diaphragm.
Because that's what you're using 90% of the time. Let's face it, that's the bulk of that's what forms the practice and also healthy life. It's kind of like, the young yogis who want to do the handstand but refuse to hold a warrior two because they don't even have the strength to hold a warrior two, but they are going to do the handstand. It kind of the same thing happens in pranayama practices, is that they don't even know how to take a regular breath, but they want to learn all the crazy alternative ways of breathing and so forth. So step number one, put your legs in the pants one leg at a time kind of thing.
Yeah, for sure. Okay.
Well, this was great talking to you, but before we wrap it up, I just have a couple of silly questions that, I love to ask people who come on a show, or at least I will as I get into this habit.
Yeah.
What is the one thing that can take you off keel and make you un-yogic?
Lack of sleep. I need my sleep. I need my beauty sleep.
What is yoga? What does Karina look like when you're not in the yogic mind frame?
Well, moody and judgmental and like everybody else, human. So emotional, I really need my sleep.
How many hours do you need a night?
8.
Yeah.
I need 8 hours, no matter what, even though I practice and everything else these days, I need 8 hours and to feel refreshed. And yes, I would need more would need more if I didn't practice. I mean, with yoga, because it's also about quality of sleep. If I don't practice yoga and I sleep 8 hours, but if I practice, those are 8 and I have 8 hours to sleep, then they're quality sleep, because then I breathe through my nose while I'm sleeping, and I'm able to turn things off, and really rest.
Okay. Well, and without calling out names of who the teacher was, but what kind of class was the worst yoga class that you've ever taken, and what did that look like?
Oh my gosh. I'm not gonna name names, but this guy was teaching a class. And he was, yes, now with Zoom, we do the whole practice with people, but at least we're speaking from our experience, from whatever. But this person wasn't breathing and teaching the class at the very front, doing the whole class, but with his back to everybody. So he wasn't looking at anybody. He had his back to us, and he was moving super fast. It was like he was moving faster then he could speak. So he was panting. He had, oh, you know, he was breathing exactly the way we were saying not to breathe through the mouth. And the whole time, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't move. He would, you know, he was doing like all these sun salutations that would take me when I, the time I was doing one, he was doing like three or four. And he could not catch it. I don't even know how he was able to speak. He was like okay.
You have to do all the time. Yeah.
So that was the worst class because I'm like, I need to breathe.
Oh, yeah. That is funny. Yeah. Talk about needing to socially distance. It's like, I just have my back to you. I don't have anything to you. Yeah.
This was a long time ago. Since then, I really know, you know, this was, you know, before Spira, before.
Yeah.
Even so, it's, we're so grateful for all the teachers that we have because they know what they're doing. They're awesome. And
yeah.
So we don't have to worry about that anymore. I don't, you know, I haven't taken a bad class in a long time because we have awesome teachers.
it's, you know, the energy and that eye-to-eye contact is a really important point, and it's important to remember. And then the closing silly question, what is the weirdest thing you ever ate?
Weirdest thing I ever ate. Well, I don't know if it's weird, but rattlesnake. Is that weird?
That dish?
That was back when I was a teenager and I was an exchange student. And in the desert, you know, like I lived with this family out in the boonies in a log house, and, you know, and they hunted and things, and, you know, and there were rattlesnakes, and that's, yeah.
All right.
You just have to adapt. It's kind of like a tougher version of chicken. I mean, it's its own thing. It doesn't taste like chicken. It's similar. It's like more of a white meat, but it's strong. Like, snakes are strong. Their muscles are really toned, right? It's like it's tougher, not in a bad way, like, you know, but it's, I remember liking it. But it's like, I can't remember exactly. I mean, it's, you know, yeah.
That's a great thing to do, those exchange programs when you're young. It's those cultural experiences are priceless as far as evolution of our being. So, well, it was great to have you, Karina, and thank you to talk to us a little bit about breath, and looking forward to have you on next time.
Thank you, Dora. Thank you for having me. This was fun.
Thanks.
All right.